Radio.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, August 15th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we get over the hump of hump day here for this work week. One guest coming your way on today's program, that is the great Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We're going to chat NFL preseason with him and then finish up our discussion on the MAC. Last week, we only got to a handful of teams. I think it was Northern Illinois, Toledo, and Ohio, but we'll make sure that we take a little bit of a deeper dive here into the Mid-American Conference as we're looking ahead to the start of college football season, not this upcoming weekend, but the following weekend. Second half of today's show, I'll do a bettors box update, take a look around the world of Major League Baseball. Want to make sure that we're spending as much time on baseball as we can here with the show. Obviously, as we talk about all the time, it's a football-driven industry, so we're going to make sure that you're ready for the NFL and for the college football seasons. But with baseball still going on in a couple of weeks here before rosters get all messed up, I want to make sure I take a little bit of time to talk some Major League Baseball here on the program as well. And of course, while I do that, we'll take a look at all the great stuff that's going on over at bangthebook.com, including our contests and an update on our Bang the Book Super Contest. So with that, we'll go ahead and jump right in with our first guest here today. That is Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything is great, Adam. Good to be back on the show.
Good to have you back on the program here. And, you know, I know you're still doing a lot with baseball. We kind of touched on this a little bit last week in terms of allocating time, allocating resources between your current Major League Baseball work and then, of course, the NFL and college football prep work. Everything's still going along pretty strong there with that. Do you feel like you're still doing a good job of managing your time?
Yeah, it's the first thing I do in the morning is I do the baseball. And then, because most of the time as the day goes on, I lose out on some of the better lines. So I try to get those to clients and myself to the sports book in the morning. And then that leaves me some more time to work on football between I'm on the West Coast, so between usually I have my play up by 8 a.m. out here, which is usually about the time that the Vegas sports books open. So then I have my play up around 8, 9 out in this time. And then I've got a few hours to work on football until right before game time where I could see who the starting lineups are and if I'm going to make any adjustments for baseball, add any plays, double up a play for my own betting, that kind of thing. And then once the baseball games start, I watch the games, and then I also watch the football preseason games. And it's a full-time job, and I get to bed and do it all over again the next day.
Well, speaking of NFL preseason games, we've got another round of those coming up here on Thursday. And, in fact, all three of these games with some pretty noteworthy line moves. You've got New England up to a 3.5-point favorite against the Philadelphia Eagles. That's the first game at 7:30 Eastern. Pittsburgh and Green Bay, huge line move in this one. Mike Tomlin announced yesterday that Ben Roethlisberger and Landry Jones will both sit this game out, wants to take a look at Josh Dobbs and Mason Rudolph. So we saw the market adjust rapidly to that one, move up from 3.5 to the 5.5 it's currently sitting. Then the Jets, who looked pretty decent last week in their preseason game. Sam Darnold looked pretty good. They're getting some love here against the Washington Redskins. That number down to pick at 5 dimes, one pretty much market-wide, 1.5 at Bovada and the Greek. So three interesting line moves here for Thursday night's preseason games. And Brian, I know you don't do a ton with the preseason because, you know, unlike a lot of the handicappers that are out there in full football mode, you're still doing a lot of stuff for baseball. But you and I were talking before we came on the air here about some really important things that, you know, bettors should focus on in terms of how they're evaluating the preseason, how they're looking at the performances of these teams that are involved. So, you know, when we look at these three games here on Thursday night, we've got four premier teams in action: Philadelphia, New England, Pittsburgh, and Green Bay. And it's probably a good time to throw out a cautionary tale about, you know, what the preseason actually means for teams like that.
Yeah, definitely. When you're taking a look at the preseason, the first thing I like to do is try to see if the coach has a history of trying to win these games and or if he doesn't. And Pittsburgh's been one of those teams that he doesn't care too much about winning these preseason games. But the Steelers have always brought in a nice set of backup players. So in that game, if you're looking to play Pittsburgh and you're getting that big line in there, you might want to take a look at Pittsburgh in the second half. Chances are they're going to be losing at the half. And a lot of these games tend to come back and forth If you see a team get off to a pretty big lead, they're not going to rub it in on them, and the other team tends to come back a little bit. So if I was to take a look at that game, I really do hate to lay numbers in the preseason. And as you said, that line is over 3, and 3 doesn't mean as much in the preseason as it does during the regular season. In fact, it's a pretty dead number because nobody wants to have to play an overtime game. So anything over 2 is something that I hate to lay when it comes to the preseason. And you have to approach each of these games differently depending on what the coaches want to take a look at, how they looked last week. If a team comes in and they lost their first game and they're playing a team who won their first game, I know that's a nice little angle to play in week 2. And the Jets line, obviously, is the Jets are looking to play the rookie quarterback. He's been taking number one snaps, so a lot of people are excited about that. But you also have a Jets team that everybody's excited about right now, playing a Washington team who is still trying to get their starting quarterback acclimated. So even though the line's gone that way, I think Washington may have a little bit of value come game time.
So let's talk. You sort of talked around this point a little bit, and I do want to hammer this point home. And we'll talk a lot about derivative betting here once we get into regular and NFL – the NFL and college football regular seasons, because derivatives can have a significant amount of value. When you're looking at these preseason games here, keep in mind, if you're laying 5.5 with Green Bay, you need this team to win by 6 points when the fourth quarter is probably going to be decided by Tim Boyle. So that's something that you really want to pay attention to as you're looking at these games, because in the second half, you know, you may have a cushion. You may have a situation like Philadelphia and New England here where we probably don't see Nick Foles in this game. If we do, we see him for a very short amount of time. Neck spasms for him. They've been taking it very easy with him in the preseason. And, of course, Carson Wentz coming off the torn ACL, they're not going to put him at risk either. Haven't seen anything definitive about Tom Brady yet, but as we talked about on yesterday's show with Ralph Michaels and the New England Patriots game, Bill Belichick was so disenfranchised, so upset, so angry about how that first team New England offense looked that Brian Hoyer came out and played in the second half. So for New England here, I think the expectation from bettors is probably that, you know, hey, they looked so bad in the first half last week. Belichick's not going to stand for that again. They're going to come out here and hang a number. And they very well could. They certainly could do that. But keep in mind, if you bet the full game, you need them to hold out that lead in the fourth quarter. So I think derivative betting makes a lot of sense here in the preseason as well, especially when you consider the coaches are going to tell you. You know, Mike McCarthy for Green Bay came out and said, I want to play all 4 quarterbacks. Well, that means that we're probably going to get at least 2 or 3 series worth of Aaron Rodgers in the first half for Green Bay. Why lay 5.5 full game when you could play Green Bay first half, knowing that you're going to get Aaron Rodgers against Josh Dobbs or Mason Rudolph for at least the first, you know, probably the first quarter, at least the first half of the first quarter?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't do a ton with the preseason. I may have a play this week, but I spend most of my time worrying about the regular season. And as you know, I break up the regular season games. I only take a look at the stats. I take a look at the stats for the full game, but I concentrate the stats on the first half, because once a game gets out of reach, you can find in the regular season the team that's behind in the second half that's got a lot of yardage because they're throwing and have to get back in the game. Well, the team that's winning is just running the football and trying to take time off the clock. So I always pay more attention to the first half stats. Well, that's also something you have to take a look at here in the preseason, not for the rest of the preseason, but to take a look at the regular seasons coming up. If you've got a team, and I talked about Pittsburgh, I remember a few years ago the Pittsburgh starters did not play very well in the preseason, but their bench players in the second half were winning like 20-0 and, you know, 24-3, and they were playing great. The problem was, that's not going to help me during the regular season because those guys are likely to be cut. You know, a lot of people were looking and they said, hey, you know, the Steelers are looking great. Well, in reality, the first team Steelers were not looking great. It just so happened that the third and the fourth string guys were looking really good. And if you don't pay a lot of attention to that, you will make some bad adjustments, bad assessments coming into the regular season.
No, that's an excellent point, too. And again, this is something we can talk about next week with the dress rehearsals and then, of course, talk about that last week of the preseason there. But there is an influence in the betting market and adjustment in perception based on how teams looked in the preseason. And realistically, there probably shouldn't be. As you mentioned, if the first-teamers come out and look great, especially with 18 new offensive coordinators league-wide, you know, maybe that is something you want to take notice of. But like you said, you want to apply the context and see, okay, was it the starters, was it the second string that played really well, or was it the third and fourth string guys that were just playing against, you know, grocery baggers and cart wranglers in the second half? So that's something that you really want to make sure that you're looking at a little bit here from an NFL standpoint, is properly placing context on what happens in the preseason so that you don't make those bad adjustments and bad assessments that you were just talking about. So this is a good week to keep that in mind because, yeah, we're going to see more big names play. I'm sure Alex Smith will get a few reps. Some of the other guys that didn't play last week will play a little bit more. Cam Newton will play a little bit more, for example, stuff like that. Jared Goff and some of the Rams starters will probably actually play. But again, you know, they're playing maybe a quarter of a game, probably more like 15 to 20% of the offensive plays. So you've got to keep that in mind as you're evaluating these box scores.
Definitely. And one of the things, and I'm sure I've talked about this before on your show, is before the preseason starts, I take the consensus of all the season wins and the lines for the first week, and I make sure that I have those for myself. And then after the preseason ends, I go back and see, okay, well, this team was a 3-point favorite going into the season, and now all of a sudden they're a 5-point favorite based on what they did in the preseason, and maybe they were an 8-win team, now they're an 8.5-win team, where in reality, nothing has changed. It's just that they happen to look good in games that nobody cares about. So I can, one of the things I like to do is play against those movements come regular season, because I know that the reasons they moved were not the reasons why I want a line to move. I want a line to move because a team played well against one-on-one first, you know, your first quarters against your first quarters when you got all the starters in there. Not full games when you've got, as you mentioned, grocery store guys playing in the fourth quarter. And a couple of decades ago, before the Rams had one of those guys, I don't know what we would have said because he was a grocery store clerk. And now we've come to call everybody that's that way Kurt Warner in that same regard. So it's funny what we used to call that beforehand.
And the last point I'll make here on the NFL, and then we'll transition over to the college side and make sure that we get a good in-depth look at the MAC, is that I think what we're trying to say here to our listeners, and, you know, listeners of the show that have been with us for a little while certainly know this. Maybe we've got some new listeners here that are novices to the industry or maybe just looking to, you know, broaden their betting horizons. This is a long game kind of thing. You know, everyone talks about, you know, oh, well, you talk about short-term streaks and things of that sort. You always have to be planning ahead. Yeah, there are preseason games this week. Yeah, you'll probably bet on some of them. But what Brian said, looking at the week one lines that are out there coming into the preseason, looking at the season win totals, that's planning ahead. That's creating opportunities for yourself down the line to where you don't fall into these overreactions or these perception biases from these exhibition games. You know, I do two articles during the NBA and the NHL seasons looking at situational betting spots for the entire week. Some of them set up the way that I expect, some of them don't, but these are things that you want to do. You want to put yourself in a position to circle opportunities to get line value, to make smart, informed wagers, and that's what this is all about. You want to make sure that you're planning out. This isn't something where, you know, we just walk into this and bet, oh, you know, yeah, it's Thursday, we're going to bet these three preseason games. That's not how it works. You have to be looking ahead, planning those opportunities out in your mind, circling those spots that could be beneficial for you. And Brian, I think that's a really good example with what you do in terms of looking at, you know, the early August win totals and week one lines compared to when the games are ready to go.
And it's not just football too. I mean, I do that in the NBA, and I know I've read your write-ups of some of these things, and you can definitely, especially when you have what I've always liked to use is a veteran team that knows how to win. And sometimes they're not going to play to their best. For example, let's take a look at San Antonio Spurs. They were one of those teams that you can really take a look at and say, okay, well, I could see them letting up here. I could see them, you know, taking advantage of this game, and then they're going to come back here and then they're going to give their best effort. Now, it doesn't always work out that way from how we look at it, but if it does, then we know we've known it earlier on, and then we know when the games come up, that's the game we want to attack, and it's worked out really well.
All right, let's transition over to the college football side here, and let's chat some Mid-American Conference football. Last week, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I think we touched on Northern Illinois, Toledo, and Ohio. So we'll hit on some of the teams that we missed here on last week's segment, and let's go ahead and start in the West with the Western Michigan Broncos. This is a tough team for me to figure out this year. I think Tim Lester did a pretty decent job, all things considered, last season. You know, I was a little bit surprised that as a former quarterback, he let the ground game be the star. He let what PJ Fleck put in place really be the driving force for his offense. Kind of makes me wonder, now that he's in year two, now that this is his team, he's put his stamp on the program, not to mention they lost a 1,200-yard rusher in Jarvion Franklin. I sort of wonder, you know, if John Wasink really gets the keys to this offense this year, makes them a tough team to power rate, I think.
Yeah, this is one of the few that I've had problems with in the MAC. I've got them right as a middle-of-the-road type of team. I've got them like 5 points lower than a Toledo, which is one of the top three teams in the league. But I've still got them maybe 7 points better than an Akron or a Ball State, something in that range. So right now I have them, the defense down a little bit. The offense basically about the same. The defense, they have a problem with their defense, and most of the teams in the MAC are going to have people are going to score like crazy on them, and that's what concerns me about Western Michigan. But they have pretty good skill position players, decent quarterback, pretty good running backs, decent wide receivers. Offensive line should be good for Western Michigan this season. But it's one of the teams that I had some problems with, and we'll probably learn a lot more from Western Michigan, at least for myself as the season goes on, than some of the other teams. And you're not always going to have a good grasp on every team coming into the season, but you make your best adjustments and your best guesses. And I have them being roughly about the same as they ended up last year. Like I said, the defense really does concern me.
Seems like I may be a little bit higher on Western Michigan here than you are. I've got them 67.5 in my power ratings. That's 75th out of the 130 teams. And we'll find out a lot there in week one. I think it's a very fascinating week one Friday night game against Syracuse, where Tim Lester was the offensive coordinator just a couple of years ago. So that's going to be a very interesting first game there in Kalamazoo for the Broncos. Then they play Michigan. They'll get blown out there. Then Delaware State, Georgia State, Miami of Ohio, Eastern Michigan, Bowling Green. Pretty soft schedule there. So they'll get a chance to iron out some of those kinks. They're a tough team, really, to figure out, as we mentioned already. But you know, when you talk about these teams in the MAC here, I think a lot of times from a talent standpoint, they are pretty interchangeable across the board. But you look for ceilings and floors. And I think Western Michigan has a higher floor, but maybe the ceiling is capped relative to what we've seen lately.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Just taking a look at some of my notes here. They only got 9 seniors on the team this year, so they're going to be a bit young. And they did have a lot of injuries last year. So if they can get the majority of those guys that were injured last year back, they'll give them some depth that they haven't had. So, and that's one of the main things when you're taking a look at the Sun Belt, the MAC, as opposed to the bigger schools, is the depth. You're going to have some pretty good players on these teams, but if they get injured, we've seen as the season goes on, when you take a look at a lot of these schools, for example, last year I was high on Ball State coming into the year, and then they just got blasted by injuries all season long. I never got a chance to bet on Ball State because they just didn't have the same players in which they started the season with and what they had in the off season. So what I thought was going to happen wasn't there because they just didn't have the depth, and most of these teams don't have the depth. So I like your comment about the ceiling may not be high, but the floor will be high, and I can agree with that 100%.
All right, well, no disrespect to Eastern Michigan. We'll come back to them in a second. But since you mentioned Ball State, I want to talk about the team from Muncie because they're up 10 points in my power ratings from where they were at the end of last season, and this is just because of who they're getting back from injury. That last year they were missing James Gilbert, who had 48 carries, but he was never healthy. 4 different quarterbacks took snaps for this team because it seemed like every single week somebody wound up getting hurt. Now, Ball State's not highly rated in my power ratings. I have them a 54. They're 113th out of my 130. But still, this is a team where you would think that things should get better for them. I mean, last year, because Gilbert was out, they got to have a true freshman run for 1,000 yards for them. So they got to build up. That's one of the things about injuries is that you get to build up depth. You get to take a look at some different guys. I mean, look, they gave up 41 points per game, only scored 18 points per game. But there's something kind of endearing about this team coming into the year. And I like that you brought up that you were higher on them coming into last season. This is something I know that Sports Cheetah, somebody you and I have both worked with a lot in the past, used to say, if there's a team that you like and they don't perform to those expectations the first year, that second year is when you do really want to look at them. And if they're healthy, maybe they can be, you know, a pretty interesting team here this year.
Yeah, they definitely can, and they've got a nice skill position set on that team. The receivers are good. The running backs are excellent, and the quarterback should be pretty good. And once again, we're looking at a defense that's just lousy. So that's a major concern for me. They were lousy last year, and hopefully they get some of that depth back this year so that could be better. But, yeah, I really thought, you know, nobody was talking about them at all last year, and I thought they had a team that could slide under the radar. And if I was betting, you know, season futures, I would have bet Ball State over easily before the season last year, and I would have lost because they just didn't have it because of the backups there. But this is a team. I've got them rated. I may even have them rated a point higher than what you have. So we're in the similar ballpark there. This is a team that could surprise. I don't have them outrageous at this point, but if they come out and play well early on, you know, they go to Kentucky in the week one, and then they play Kansas, and then they play Northern Illinois. So they'll start the season playing three teams that are better than them. And it's not too often you could say Kansas is better than somebody, but that may be Kansas' only win on the season. But, you know, they are getting Kansas at home. But I'm kind of hoping that they look decent against those three teams. They don't look great, so we don't lose any value in the line. And then after that, you know, they'll play Maine and then go to Michigan State. And then they'd have the bulk of the schedule playing Buffalo, who a lot of people like. And, excuse me, I'm checking out the Central Michigan schedule. I'm looking at the wrong one. I'm sorry. But they play Central Connecticut State early, and then Notre Dame, Indiana, Western Kentucky. So once they get to Kent State, I'm hoping there'll be some value on there because Kent's not very good, and I think Ball State could have their way in that game.
Yeah, for Ball State, I mean, again, you're talking about players returning from injury, and there's always questions about that, you know, because these guys were hurt, and a lot of them are coming back from major injuries. I think James Gilbert had a pretty serious ankle injury. I think a couple of their quarterbacks maybe had ACLs. So, you know, this isn't a situation where these guys were just out with, you know, maybe kind of a nagging hamstring or something like that. They were out with some pretty significant injuries. So you always kind of wonder how guys like that will come back into the mix. But again, for Ball State, at least this year, there's hope. There's optimism. Like I said, you had a 1,000-yard true freshman running back last year. That's huge. You know, when you're a team like Ball State, where you need to prevent your defense from getting exposed as much as humanly possible, you now have multiple running backs that you can use so that you keep guys fresh, nobody tires out. But then if you need that freshman who ran the ball 210 times for you last year, you know that he can be a feature back for you. So that's a really good thing for this team as they move forward. And again, defense will be a lot better this year, you know, with better health on the offensive side, maybe a lower turnover margin, especially if they're running the football a lot more. And of course, you know, probably just the simple fact that the whole team overall should be a little bit stronger. You're obviously dying to talk about Central Michigan. So let's go ahead and talk about the Chippewas a little bit here. Because this is another tough team for me to figure out. You know, John Bonamigo, we talked about him last year a lot. 8 wins, played so well against those directional Michigan rivals. He's posting pictures on Twitter of him sleeping with rivalry trophies in the bed. And, you know, it seems like this team really gravitated to him again. You know, 2 years ago, he got the job in 2015. They went 7-6, then 6-7. And then that season last year, going 8-5. Most wins for Eastern Michigan since 2008, when they also went 8-5. But for Central Michigan here, you know, you sort of wonder now. They don't have that player at quarterback that they've had over the last few years. You know, a couple of years ago, they had Cooper Rush. Last year, they had a Power 5 transfer in there. Before that, you're talking about Ryan Radcliffe and Dan LaFever. Maybe this is just a program that churns out quarterbacks, but for right now, it looks like that's a glaring hole for this program.
Definitely does. I have them rated as one of the worst offenses in the MAC this year. Last year, they were like a top 80 offense. This year, they're one of the bottom 10 in college football. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't like Central Michigan at all last year. I came into the season, I was talking to Brad Powers, one of your other guests on the show, and neither one of us liked it. And I believe he bet his season wins under. I think it's one of the few that he lost. And they just continued to win for the coach. And, hey, you know, you've got to give credit to the emotional aspect of college football. If you've got something to play for, I mean, just take a look at Clemson and Dabo Swinney. Those kids love that coach. And if you've got a coach that the players just do, they'll run through a wall for that coach, that's what you want. And that's what Central Michigan had last year. But as we say, it's a different year, and we'll have to see what happens. But they've got good running backs. The receivers and the quarterback are the concerns on the offense. Defense, they're actually not bad for being a MAC team. Central Michigan's been pretty good defensively. They're not going to be as good as last year, and I think that's going to be because the offense won't be on the field as often. So the defense will be on the field more often, and they can be exposed a little bit. But, it's a team that really surprised me last year. I'm giving them a little bit more credit. I probably got 3 points higher than Ball State, but by the end of the season, I could see Ball State passing them up and being a stronger team than Central. We'll just have to see how it goes for all the depth on these teams as the season goes on.
One other directional Michigan school to hit on real quickly, Eastern Michigan. So they lose Brogan Robach, who's kind of become something of a Hard Knocks star with the Cleveland Browns on that show, as the fourth string quarterback. You know, Chris Creighton, the job that he did to get this team to a bowl game in 2016, first time in 19 years that the Eagles went to a bowl game, was phenomenal. Last year, they only go 5-7. And when they picked up that seventh loss, we talked a lot about them at that time of the year in November, because we were looking at their games against Miami of Ohio and Bowling Green. And we were kind of saying, okay, what does this team do now? You know, deflating loss against Central Michigan takes you out of bowl contention, lost to a directional school rival, and then they come back and win both of those games. Now, they didn't come close to covering against Bowling Green and probably should have lost that game. But the fact remains that they rallied. They got to 5 wins. They won those last 2 games. Kudos to them for that. I think that kind of speaks to the job that Chris Creighton has done and the respect that these players have for him. That being said, this is a team that's depth shy. And now they lost their quarterback, who was effectively a 4-year starting quarterback. What do you see from Eastern Michigan this year?
Yeah, Eastern Michigan is one of those teams, and for the last few years, they've been one of those teams that I love to bet on because they're not overly flashy. They've got a very good defense, and that's, you know, when you're looking at a conference like the MAC or the Sun Belt, I tend to want to play the teams that have a good defense because most of the teams in the league don't, and I think the Eastern Michigan defense will be just as good as it was last year. They've got a good offensive line. But the problem will be, once again, as you mentioned, the quarterback situation. Anytime you get a quarterback, I don't care if he's, you know, third string in the NFL or if he's been invited to camp in the NFL, he's a pretty good damn quarterback. And for a MAC team to lose a quarterback like that, that's a major differential. And for them to come out this year, that's the one position when you look at when you're going to be watching Week One games and Week One. They play Monmouth. Don't know if that'll be on TV, but then they go to Purdue the second game, and Purdue is one of those teams a lot of people seem to think is going to be really improved this year. Take a look at that quarterback play, and if you don't see the quarterback, because he should have a good offensive line, the quarterback making the right reads and doing anything offensively, it could be a long year for Eastern Michigan. But like I said, they have that defense that's still going to be good, a good offensive line. If the quarterback can get some semblance of moving the football down the field, this could be a team that could surprise a lot of people like it did last year, and we're just going to have to see. But I like the coaching there, and I like the defense, and that's always a step up when you take a look at these teams in the MAC. And I like this team. We'll just have to see how the quarterback plays out.
Well, and as we look at the season win totals here for the bottom of the MAC West, Eastern Michigan, the highest one, 5.5, over -20 at BetOnline. So a return to a bowl certainly possible there for the boys from Ypsilanti. And then you've got Ball State at 4 or 4.5. We're seeing a heavily juiced 4.5 at BetOnline, 4 under -30 at 5 dimes. And then Central Michigan, 4.5 under -145. So while the bottom of this division is interesting, doesn't seem like we've got a whole lot of great teams, which in comparison to the MAC East division, it's Ohio and then a bunch of really marginal to awful teams on that side of the MAC.
I'm not sure if I agree. A lot of people are so high on Ohio, they're ignoring the rest of the conference, the rest of the division. I like Ohio, don't get me wrong, but you've got Miami and Buffalo, I think are going to be pretty good teams this year. But, you know, your Akron's, your Bowling Green's, and the Kent States, Kent may be the worst team in college football, or at least competing for it once again this year. But I think Miami and Buffalo are going to be teams that we may be able to make some money on, because Ohio is so talked about as being the dominant team in that division.
All right, so let's talk Miami of Ohio then. You've got an experienced starting quarterback there in Gus Ragland, who did regress last season. I mean, 2 years ago when he came in, took this team to the St. Petersburg Bowl, they were 0-6, then won six straight, got to that bowl game. Gus Ragland was celebrated as a hero. Last year, 55.8% completion percentage, 19-7 touchdown interception ratio. He regressed a little bit for Chuck Martin's team. So what do you do in a situation like that where you had this kid who played phenomenally 2 years ago, not so great last year? Do you tend to be a little bit more optimistic about a team like Miami of Ohio because you've seen him do that before? How do you approach the Redhawks here?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be quite as strong offensively as they had been a year ago, or a year ago. They'll be better than what they were a year ago, not quite as good as 2 years ago, but I still think the quarterback, he's one of the top quarterbacks in the league in my regard. I like the defense on this team. If there is a team other than maybe in Ohio or Northern Illinois or Toledo that's good from top to bottom, I think it could be Miami. I mean, probably the biggest deficit they have is in wide receiver and tight ends, the passing game. But if he comes out and plays like he did a couple of years ago, you know, they could take care of that. So, I think I've got them right. Let me see what I have there. I've got them at the 65. What do you have them as?
Let's see. I have Miami of Ohio 64.5. So we're right there in the same ballpark.
Okay, so, yeah, we seem to be agreeing on most of these teams at this point. But that's to me, with the 65, is one of the better teams in the MAC. I think I've got Ohio at a 70. So they're in the same general area. Ohio is the better team, but they're not that far off. If Miami can have that offense like they did a couple of years ago, they're right up there with Ohio, and their offense won't be as good as Ohio is, but I think their defense has a chance to be a little bit better, and we're going to go with that. To me, there's basically three elite teams in this conference, probably two or three mid-range, and then the rest are all dregs of the conference, and anything can happen in those type of games. So I think Miami and Buffalo are two of the teams that may be overlooked, although I have heard from a lot of guys that really like Buffalo this year. And in fact, I was recognized in the airport one day, and there was a guy there from Buffalo. And obviously, you're talking about probably the best quarterback or one of the top three quarterbacks in the conference. And so they're very excited in the city of Buffalo about this team.
Yeah, I have Ohio as a 70.5, so we are pretty much in a similar range there when it comes to those teams. And Buffalo here, I've got Buffalo 64.5 in my power ratings as well, so I have them right there with Miami of Ohio. They do host Miami of Ohio in that October 30th game, the day before Halloween. Lance Leipold did such a fantastic job with this Buffalo team last year. They had some quarterback injuries. They had some things that they had to figure out. But you will probably agree with me on this point, and this is a very important point to bring up with Buffalo. This team won six games last year. They've been to a bowl twice in program history, 08 and 13, lost both of them, won six games last year, didn't get picked for a bowl game. If you want to find a chip on its shoulder coming into the 2018 season, there's not a bigger one than the Buffalo Bulls.
Definitely. This is a team that should have gone to a bowl. And that's the sad part, is the bowl committee worries too much. Well, I guess I can't blame them, but they worry so much on how many people are going to come, how many people are going to travel. And Buffalo is not known to be one of those teams. So they would rather take a team from a big school where they know they're going to get those players in there from an Arkansas or one of the weaker teams, you know, without Purdue or something that I'd rather see Buffalo play, and it's more of a reward for Buffalo. Problem is, they don't travel very well. They're not known to be that way, and that costs the team, and it really should not cost the team. That's up to the fans. That costs – the fans are costing them, which I don't think is going to make much of a difference. You're not going to get more fans going to a game just so they can get a chance to go to a bowl game. But, yeah, you're right. This Buffalo team is – they're excellent at quarterback, excellent at receivers. The offense is loaded. Any weakness would be the defensive backs and against the pass, and that's always a concern. But I don't see too many elite passers coming out of the MAC this year. It's been a cradle of coaches, and they've also had some solid quarterbacks coming out of the MAC in the past. But this year you've got three or four, maybe five quarterbacks that are pretty good quarterbacks, and the rest of the teams are just having to piece together a running game, and hopefully their defense comes around. But Buffalo's a team that I expect pretty good things from this year. And hopefully, and you never know, you know, until the lines come out for some of the games further in the season, if that's a team that we could take advantage of. But that is one of the teams right now where I'm hoping that my feelings and your feelings are a little bit different than what the linesmaker's feelings are.
All right, let's talk Akron, who was a surprising participant in the MAC championship game last year, blown out by Toledo in that game, absolutely embarrassed by Florida Atlantic in the Boca Raton Bowl. Line was 22.5, which I think was the highest spread for a bowl game in history. Don't quote me on that, but I know it was definitely one of the highest, if not the highest. Looks like it's going to be a tough year in the Rubber City for the Zips, though. 6-2 in conference last year. They won't win six games total this year. I'd be surprised if they make any kind of noise in this division.
Yeah, I agree. And being an Akron graduate, it was nice to see them go to the championship and go to the bowl. But being that I studied the MAC, it was very nice to be able to bet against them in those games, because it was clear that they were not the team that should have gone to the championship in last year. And Ohio was just was the best team, and you know, and Akron was able to get there. But yeah, it's a team right now that I'm hoping a lot of people look at last year and think that they're a quality team, because I don't have them being very good at all. I talked about Kent being the worst team in this league, and I have Akron just right above them, and we'll have to see how the lines turn out. But, you know, they go to Nebraska right now. Everybody's real high on Nebraska because of the coaching change. We'll see how long it takes to get it together. But then they have Morgan State, and then two more road games against Northwestern and Iowa State. So they'll be beat up pretty well by the time they get into MAC play. And with a team that doesn't have a lot of depth like that, Akron, we may not be able to get that advantage of being able to go against them once they get into the conference action. So we'll have to see how it goes. But, yeah, decent quarterback, you know, but I just don't see the skill position players on this team to compete in this conference.
All right, well, then the last two teams to touch on, we finish up our Mid-American Conference, Bowling Green, Kent State. Any hope for either one of the two teams here?
Not really. I think Bowling Green, could be a little bit better.
Just, you know what? Let me ask you this, Brian. If we combine them into Bowling State and put both of their rosters together, how many games would they actually win?
Six. You think they'd win six?
I don't know. Maybe. Five. They'd have the coolest name in college football, though, the Bowling State, I don't know, whatever you'd want to call them at that point. The Bowling State Lebowski. How about we go with that?
They'd be the Golden Falcons.
There you go.
Yeah, it's these are two of the teams that really look bad. And Bowling Green, excuse me, Bowling Green offensively is going to be decent. That's just what they do. They throw the ball, and they have success in that. But, you know, they're pretty good at the wide receivers, pretty decent at quarterback, but they don't have any running game, and the defense is lousy. They don't have much of an offensive line, which is a real concern when you throw the ball as much as they want to throw the ball. Defense may be a little bit better. I've got their offense a little bit worse this year. I think what we saw last year out of Bowling Green, they went 3-9, 2-6 in conference. I think it's going to be very similar to what we see this year. If they get to three wins, I think that may be better than what I think they'll get to. So if they're able to get three wins overall, it'll probably be a good season for them. But, you know, they go to Oregon the first game, and that's going to be pretty ugly, even though Oregon may be a little overrated at this point. And, hey, they get to play Maryland. So we get to see what happens in week two. But, yeah, we'll see what happens with Bowling Green. But I'm not looking for much out of them this year.
Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com, professional handicapper over there. What do you guys got going on over at the website right now, Brian?
I'm heading over to do videos today. I'm actually going to speak about the NBA season wins that came out this week and seeing if we can get a little bit of an upper hand on those, try to tell you some of the things I look for when I'm playing a season win, some of the things that most people look at that I ignore, things of that sort. And we've got a lot of good handicapping. We're going to talk about some football games coming up in college football. It'll be some nice videos will be out this afternoon, and those will be over at wagertalk.com. And still remaining with that great baseball season going on. Just got to get my play up for today, and hopefully we can get back on the winning track, as we did lose last night on the Tigers, and we've been very good off of a loss this season.
Brian Leonard, you can find him on Twitter at BLeonardSports, and of course over at wagertalk.com. Brian, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining me, bud. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Everybody have a good week.
Good breakdown there of the Mid-American Conference with Brian Leonard. Again, he's been an expert in that conference for about three decades now in this industry. So good to get his thoughts on one of those group of five conferences. And again, as we've talked about, I've driven the point home a lot here. Those are the important conferences to know. Those are the ones where you're going to find the values. We're going to find the betting opportunities. So you definitely want to make sure that you're paying close attention to those group of five schools, especially because, like I said, a lot of people are going to look at those conferences and say, well, these teams are pretty interchangeable. Well, maybe, but if you can find some of those spots where you've got a team that is 2 or 3 points better than the other team and the line's not really reflecting it, could get some good value on the group of five leagues there. So very, very important for you to make sure that you're digging deep into those conferences. Then, of course, good thoughts from Brian as well on the preseason and in terms of evaluating the performances that we're actually seeing. All right, to wrap things up here with today's show, I'm going to do the bettors box, and you know that my picks and tips piece is available every day over at bangthebook.com. Alan Moody doing some great baseball work as well. David LeFerrier doing the same thing with his bullpen report. Also his amateur handicapper journal that he's keeping over there with one entry per week, kind of self-evaluation as somebody who's trying to become more of a fixture, more of a staple in this industry. And so, you know, that's a really interesting read that he updates on a daily basis or on a weekly basis, excuse me, over there at bangthebook.com. But we've got lots of stuff going on at the website. I'm working on my NASCAR previews. I got the Xfinity series up. The Cup series is done. I just have to post it. We've got all 130 season win totals for college football, all 32 season win totals for the NFL. We're also working on our contest page, kind of making that experience a little bit better for those that are involved. And we will be doing the Bang the Book Super Contest again. We're working out some bugs with that and making sure that that's going to be good to go here for week one of the NFL season. So if you are one of the contestplayers.com where you can win cash prizes, make sure you sign up and get involved in those. And, of course, while you're over at bangthebook.com as well, check out our sportsbook reviews. You know that DSI Sportsbook, very good friends of the show here, offering that Bang100 promo code, get you 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. The redesigned sportsbook, which looks absolutely fantastic, the redesigned mobile interface also looks very, very good, but a good opportunity to take advantage of that promo code and do that here. Do yourself a favor, get a couple more books so you can shop around for the best prices and take advantage of what some of those sports books are offering in terms of bonus codes. And we've got a bunch of updates to those over at bangthebook.com. So make sure that you check those out. All right. So let's chat some Major League Baseball here for a few minutes. And, you know, I've talked about this a little bit in my picks and tips article, and I talked about it a little bit on the show last week. The month of August has been kind of strange, and we're now 2 weeks away from the trade deadline. Things are very, very tight in the National League. You've got several teams within 5 or 6 games of making the playoffs. You've got division races in all three divisions, which is not really the case in the American League, where you only have the one out west, and the loser of that division race out west going to wind up being the second wild card. Could even be the first wild card if the Yankees continue to struggle a little bit. So, you know, you've got some very interesting playoff races here. And what does that mean for us overall? Well, it means a couple of different things. For one thing, as we've talked about at length here this season, big favorites have been a very good bet in Major League Baseball. You've gotten a very substantial return on your investment for playing those minus 180 or higher favorites. You're going to see a lot of those as we go throughout the rest of the season here, because you're going to have these teams that are in the quote-unquote must-win situations against some of these bottom feeders. And in particular, you're going to see it with teams like Boston, New York, even Tampa Bay possibly to some extent, the Indians, the Astros, the Athletics, even the Mariners, when they play some of the bottom half of the American League. So don't be allergic to chalk here at this time of the year. I know I've seen some people playing the 1.5 run line favorite, the 2.5 alternate run line favorite. I get it. Just don't be allergic to chalk, because you're going to have a lot of situations here going forward where you're going to have to lay a pretty penny to make a bet in Major League Baseball. Now, of course, here in the National League, things are a little bit different. And the National League has been a much tougher handicap for me here of late, because you have a lot of these teams that are by and large interchangeable. You have a lot of these teams that are on pretty equal footing overall. The Dodgers have dropped 5 straight, so they've kind of fallen off the pace a little bit. The Cardinals have won 7 straight. Those are your 2 outliers right now. The Braves playing very well with 4 straight wins. You've got some teams that can't afford to lose that are losing games, like the Phillies. You've got some teams that really need to bank wins that aren't, like the Chicago Cubs, who now have the Brewers just 2 games behind them. So all of the situational handicapping elements come into play here, where you're going to walk into situations where, you know, the Cubs are going to finish up their series against the Brewers. You know, let's say that after they play the Brewers here at some point in time this season, they wind up playing the Marlins, or, you know, like, for example, here this, they play 4 against the Pirates, then they play Detroit for 2 games. Detroit's a very bad team. But if you're the Chicago Cubs and you've been playing, you know, these very important types of games, then you run into a team that's well below you, there's a tendency to play down to your competition here. We're 120 games into the regular season for some of these teams already. You're tired. You've got 40 games left to go. You're trying to hit that second wind, but you're tired a little bit. And if you get a team that wants to play against you, a team that maybe takes some pride and some solace in playing spoiler, that becomes a pretty tough game for you. So I think as I'm looking through this Major League Baseball season here, I'm focusing a little bit more on the situational elements of handicapping in the month of August, just for the simple fact that, you know, I think we know pretty much all there is to know about a lot of these teams, about a lot of these pitchers specifically. And one of the things I'm really proud of here this year is the fact that I've been able to stay off of some of these pitching matchups, despite the clear signs that are out there. Yesterday, for example, Nick Pivetta was great for the Phillies. He's got a 4.37 ERA, 3.49 FIP, 3.21 xFIP. So the market came in on him. We saw about a 35-cent line move on the Phillies there in that game against the Red Sox and Rick Porcello. Now, I think there's a sentiment out there about the Boston Red Sox that because they have such a big lead out there for the division, they're up 10 on the Yankees, and they're up 10 now in the race for home field advantage. The Yankees have the second best record in the American League, so they're actually up, 12.5 on Houston for home field advantage throughout the American League playoffs, and they're well ahead of everybody in the National League for home field. So the Boston Red Sox, if they run the table in the AL playoffs, we'll have home field throughout, and it's really not even close. So I think that you kind of have this sentiment out there in the betting market of they're going to slow it down a little bit here. They're going to relax a little bit. They're going to take a foot off the gas pedal a little bit here, and they really haven't shown any signs of doing that. Now, I do think today is a much better opportunity to back the Phillies, just given the pitching matchup, just given the spot that Boston's in here after winning yesterday's game in close fashion. You know, I think that Rick Porcello was a little bit better of a matchup against the Phillies than Nate Eovaldi is going to be. And I wrote about that in my picks and tips piece. And we're seeing another significant line move on that game here today. But you know, these situational elements are really driving factors here. And, you know, sometimes when I get a pitching situation that I would normally play in the past, I would be all over Nick Pivetta in that spot. I would have been all over fading Jaime Barria last night against the Padres. But I'm getting some more perspective, getting some more discretion here because I'm taking a look at the total package. So, yes, the ERA to FIP to xFIP discrepancies that I've talked about throughout the year on the Bettors Box are still relevant. They do still have value. But I also think that you need to apply additional context to them here at this time of the year and understand that, you know, sometimes spots just aren't going to set up for these guys. And furthermore, we're 120, 130 innings into the season for a lot of these pitchers. Maybe regression's just not coming. Maybe it's just not going to show up for some of these guys. Chris Archer is a prime example here. Chris Archer, 4.36 ERA, 3.85 FIP, 3.81 xFIP. He's pitching today against Minnesota. It's a day game, so you won't hear this before that game goes off. normally I'd want to play on a guy like Archer with a pitcher slash like that. But he's had all season to figure out some of his command problems, and he hasn't done it. So at some point, I just have to look at it and say, you know what? This guy's probably not going to figure this out. This guy's probably not going to be the starter that we envision him being. So I've got to stay off of him. I have to avoid him. So for Archer today, you know, that was a no play for me. But there are other guys here. You know, you look at, again, Jaime Barria. He has the second biggest ERA to FIP discrepancy in Major League Baseball, 350 to 473. 473 FIP. Low strikeout rate, high home run rate. But this is a guy who just keeps going out there. And, yeah, there are little nibbles. You know, he's going out there giving up three runs over five, which is going to elevate a 350 ERA. But he hasn't had that blow up. He hasn't had that sustained run of being a really bad pitcher. So I look at a guy like him and I say, you know what? Maybe I'll fade him. Maybe I'll do some 1% and 2% plays. But I have to realize that at this stage of the game, maybe this just isn't going to happen. Or if it does happen, it'll be a one-off game. He'll give up eight runs and that'll be that. You know, we do see regression happen in that kind of way. Just ask John Lester, a guy who I've had isolated since the All-Star break, who we've had a lot of success with fading since the Midsummer Classic. Chase Anderson is another guy. 397 ERA, 526 FIP, minus 1.29 runs in that ERA to FIP discrepancy, highest in Major League Baseball. But he's actually been better since coming off the DL. And the Brewers, again, I've talked about this throughout the season as well, the Brewers are a team that puts such an emphasis on contact management that you can carry a low ERA and a high FIP and a high exit for this team because you're avoiding home runs. You're pitching to weak contact. Anderson's done a fantastic job with that. So the market will keep fading Chase Anderson, but maybe they shouldn't. This is why it's so important to go to that second level. And I used to be somebody who would just look at that and say, 397 ERA, 526 FIP, 486 XFIP, bet against him, click, submit, done. You can't do that anymore because we have additional metrics that are out there and we have different ways of understanding the game. Look at John Lester. John Lester, 389 ERA, 502 FIP, 474 XFIP. We've faded him a lot here in the second half, and it has paid us back handsomely. But John Lester was a guy, unlike Chase Anderson, who didn't have the best exit velocity metrics. He was allowing hard contact and getting lucky with it. Chase Anderson was allowing weak contact, which generally helps out a pitcher. So that's why we've been against John Lester. That's why I'm against Junior Guerra today for the Brewers. Another day game as the Cubs are facing the Brewers. Junior Guerra, 340 ERA, 430 FIP, 437 XFIP, 437 Sierra as well. He's allowed the sixth highest average exit velocity on fly balls and line drives. How long can you continue to be fortunate allowing high velocity contact? I don't think you can. So that's why I'm looking to fade a guy like Junior Guerra here today. So again, it's very important to go to the second and third level with these pitchers and actually see what's going on with these guys. Try to figure out why they have those big discrepancies, why they've been able to spit in the face of their advanced metrics, or why they haven't been able to follow up their advanced metrics. So again, the song remains the same. And we see line moves based on these guys every single day out there in the betting market. You just want to make sure that you're doing your research. And it's hard to do with football season coming up and all the excitement with that. But I've got a good base. We've got a good foundation. If you've been reading the article every day, listening to the Bettors Box all season long, these are all names that you've heard. These are all names that you know, and you know the intricacies about all of these guys. And that helps. It helps to study the game. If you want to be serious at this, if you want to be successful no matter what the sport is, you have to study the game, put in that time early, and then just adjust late. Build your foundation early, adjust late. That's why we do power ratings for college football. That's why we do all 130 season win total previews. That's why we do these previews on the shows, to get that foundation and then be able to adjust late. So if you're a little bit late to the Major League Baseball side of things, look to do this for next year. But for now, I think there are still good opportunities out there in the baseball betting market. Speaking of pitchers, something else I wanted to touch on here today. We're getting a lot of call-ups now, a lot of minor league call-ups, spot starters, long men that are moving into the rotation. What should we be looking for with these pitchers? I think this is a very important thing because a lot of times these guys are unknowns. You know, you go back and you look at the minor league statistics and these sample sizes are 40, 50, 60 innings because teams start to move guys up the ranks a little bit. So you don't have great sample sizes with these pitchers. So someone may be out there asking themselves, Adam, what should I be looking for? If I've got a minor league call-up, what should I be looking for? What should I use to evaluate this guy? A few things I want to mention. The first, it is very important to look and see where that team's AAA affiliate is when you're evaluating these pitchers. If you've got a guy who pitches in Colorado Springs, like the Milwaukee Brewers AAA team, or you've got guys in El Paso or Albuquerque or Reno, it's hard to pitch in those environments. So you have to keep that in mind when you're breaking down the performance, breaking down the statistics. If a guy's allowed a lot of home runs in Reno or in Albuquerque, something like that, and has a more favorable pitching environment at the big league level, maybe that elevates his command profile. Maybe that helps him out. Similarly, if you've got a guy, you know, in the International League pitching in Indianapolis or Nashville or Memphis or something like that, then all of a sudden they're going to making a road start in a small ballpark, or maybe pitching in Cincinnati or, you know, Colorado, something like that. That matters too. If you've got a guy who has a high home run rate in a decent pitching environment, that's a problem. If you have a guy who has a high home run rate in a terrible pitching environment, you may want to take another look at that. Or if he's got a really good home run rate in a bad pitching environment, that's fantastic. So that's first and foremost, the thing that I would tell you is look to see where these affiliates are and then think about what we know about baseball. If they're in a, not a cold weather city, because there really aren't any in the International League or the PCL, but if they're in a city where, you know, there's not a ton of humidity or not a ton of thin air or something like that, what do their numbers look like? If their numbers are bad, that's a red flag. That's a problem. That's a concern. If their numbers are good, hey, maybe this guy's kind of got it. And another thing that you want to look at, it's very, very important to look at the advanced metrics on the FanGraphs player pages for these call-ups. Because we talk about the big differences between the minor leagues and the big leagues. Hitting is a big one. Breaking ball depth is a very big one. You've got guys that throw hard at all levels of baseball now. Velocity is not that big of a deal anymore for hitters that are coming up through the system or hitters that are developing. It's just not that big of a deal anymore. Breaking ball command is huge, and you know, hitters at the big league level will lay off of pitches that guys at the minor league level won't. So those are two things. You would expect walk rates to go up, and guys with good breaking balls can have success. But another thing that's a big, big, huge difference from the minor league levels to the big league levels, defense. You will see a lot of guys in the minor leagues with high ERAs, high BABIPs, low left on base percentages, but good advanced metrics because their teams suck defensively. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that when you talk about the minor leagues, you're talking about development. You're talking about wanting to look at video of your own personnel. You're studying the mechanics of your pitcher. You're studying the hitting mechanics of your hitter. You're not scouting the opposition as much. You're not doing as much scouting and looking at spray charts for batted balls. So by and large, unless you're an organization that really subscribes to the shift, your minor league affiliates are not going to do that as much because they're just worried about making sure their players can play defense, making sure their players are getting throws off, making sure their players are hitting and pitching. They're not doing the advanced scouting to the level that Major League Baseball teams are because you win a minor league championship, it's great. It's awesome for your system. It's great for your players to get that experience. By and large, it's irrelevant. You know, you create a culture of winning or whatever, that's fine. When you get to the big league level, it's about dollars. It's about wins. It's about titles. It's about pennants. It's about attendance. Not so much in the minor leagues. So the areas of focus for these minor league teams are a lot different. And that includes a lesser amount of advanced scouting. So defensively, these minor league teams are not very good. That will affect the pitcher. That will drive up a pitcher's ERA. So look at those advanced metrics. Look at those rate stats, strikeout and walk rate, home run to fly ball rate. Very important. Those are things that pitchers can control. Those are things that, regardless of the defense, they can have success with. So when they get to the big league level and they've got guys that can field and they've got advanced scouting reports that tell the players where to be positionally in the outfield or in the infield, that helps a pitcher that already has good command, already has good strikeout and walk rates. So those are the guys you would expect to have success. Sure, sometimes it's a command issue, and it may not matter regardless of level. But overall, when you're looking at these minor league call-ups, the guys that are good from a strikeout to walk ratio perspective and from a home run perspective are guys to back. Those are guys that can come up and have success. If you've got a guy that has a 5 ERA but a 3 FIP, it's because his team defense probably isn't very good. And defenses are so much better at the big league level. So those are two really important things to look at when it comes to pitchers that are minor league call-ups or spot starters that are maybe pitching a doubleheader, something like that. Location of where they start and strikeout walk ratio, home run to fly ball percentage, and then look for some of those defensive outliers to where, you know, those things can be tough too. If you're a 23-year-old kid, you're trying to refine your arsenal and you've got a catcher that can't catch or an infield defense that's not very good or an outfield defense that isn't very good, it dictates the way you pitch. It dictates how you're going to attack those hitters, because if you're in a tight spot and you don't trust your defense to make a play, maybe you try to work up in the zone. Well, maybe that costs you. Or if you don't have a good outfield defense, you try to work down in the zone. Well, more ground balls go for hits than fly balls. So it's a total package of things. It's a hard life for a lot of different reasons to be a minor leaguer, not just the poor wages and the bus travel. It's also a constant game of questioning your own ability, of having wavering confidence. When you come up to the big league level and you've got Mike Trout patrolling center field, that's much different than whoever the hell your AAA center fielder is. So there are so many little intricacies to breaking down these call-ups from the minor leagues that it's a handicap unto itself, just looking at that guy, not just looking at how his offense matches up against the other pitcher and things like that. So lots of considerations with these new pitchers, but hopefully that gives you a little bit of a guide, helps you a little bit along the way in terms of trying to understand, evaluate some of those different guys that are out there. So probably won't talk baseball the rest of the week here on the show. So let's go ahead and take a look at some of the matchups coming up here Thursday, Friday, and so on. And you've got some interesting pitching matchups on Thursday night. You've got a guy in Blake Snell who's maybe a little bit of a regression candidate against the Tampa Bay team or against the New York team that, you know, is not played as well as it would have hoped over the last few weeks. And obviously the offense for the Yankees is a little bit watered down without Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez. But for Tampa Bay here, standalone road game, you're not really playing for anything except a winning record if you're Tampa Bay. Blake Snell recently back from the DL. I think it's a tough spot for Tampa Bay. Now we'll see what this line looks like, but those are the kinds of considerations you want to make here at this time of the year, is look at the total package. Situationally, Tampa Bay goes to Boston, you know? So this is just one of those spots for them where, actually, excuse me, it's not a makeup game. It's a getaway day game. Getaway day game. You're going to Boston, right? For the Yankees, you're going, and what are you doing here this week? You're hosting Toronto, so you don't even have to move anywhere. Situationally, the spot sets up for New York. Snell, recently off the DL. Yankees not going anywhere. Tampa Bay bouncing to another city. Getaway day game. All of these things are considerations in the month of August. All of these things are very important to keep in mind. Colorado, they take on Atlanta Thursday night. John Gray, huge outlier in the ERA to FIP discrepancy department. This poor guy on the season, big time confidence with a 481 ERA, 323 FIP, 310 XFIP. His strikeout percentage minus walk percentage of 20% is top 20 in Major League Baseball. We're talking about guys like Corey Kluber, Clayton Kershaw, Zach Greinke, James Paxton, Patrick Corbin, Max Scherzer, Garrett Cole, Jacob DeGrom. John Gray has been very good this year, but he hasn't had a whole lot of success on batted balls or with his sequencing luck. He's a guy that, since coming back from the minor leagues, has been very good. Atlanta playing very well right now, but they're sending out Julio Teheran on Thursday night, who is the weakest link in that rotation. So we'll probably see a Colorado line move on John Gray in that spot. So if you like John Gray in the Rockies, get him early, because it's not going to stay that way for long. Thursday night, you got Chicago and Pittsburgh. John Lester going once again for the Cubs, taking on the Pirates and Ivan Nova. Don't like John Lester. We've been over this a lot. Don't really like Ivan Nova either. Do we get an over here for Pittsburgh? Well, here's the problem, right? Pittsburgh, coming off of a long road trip, had that interleague series in Minnesota. Now they're coming back home. Chance to make up some ground in the division, and that would be nice for them, and certainly to maybe make up some ground in the wild card race as well, but coming back off of that long road trip. So what happens for the Pirates in this spot? They get a regression candidate in John Lester, but maybe this isn't a spot where I look to fade John Lester. Maybe I hold it off a little bit. John Lester's next two starts, the Pirates and the Tigers. not great, then the Mets. So maybe we extracted our value from John Lester already, at least for the short term. But again, you still want to handicap that game, see if you find some opportunities that are out there. We'll go to Friday. Marcus Stroman for Toronto. Again, another positive regression candidate. Stroman is a guy that got hit very, very hard in the season, has been much better since he came back from the DL. 5.03 ERA, 3.79 FIP, 3.74 XFIP. Maybe Stroman gets some love here on Friday night against the Yankees and Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn, a guy that has allowed some hard contact this year. Toronto makes a lot of hard contact. Maybe that's a play where you do throw a first five bet on Toronto in an underdog capacity, something like that. You try to circle these spots and then see if the line lines up to where you want it to be. So that's what I'm doing here. I always look ahead the day before, and then I look at the overnight lines and say, okay, this is where I expected this to be. This is where I expect this to move. And then you go from there. So again, challenging while you're trying to prepare for the football seasons. I certainly understand that, but this is why you build that foundation out early on in the season so that you don't have to spend a ton of time isolating these spots and then realizing if you are, and then you're deciding if you want to play them or not. So lots of considerations across all of these markets. And I think that that's one thing that we've done a really good job of explaining here on these shows in the past, is that you do the work and you set yourself up for future success. In the short term, success will come and go. It's a game of variance. But in the long term, if you build yourself up for this, if you give yourself the right tools to get started, that's where you wind up having a whole lot of success. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com. Friday, we'll get Lockie Lockerson on the program again. We're going to chat Pac-12 with him, and we'll see what other guests I come up with here for the rest of the week. Again, keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. We got a lot of great stuff going on over there. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.